the Earl Ingram Show now. Sandy Williams sitting in. Earl has had to leave. I'll talk about that in just a minute. I'd call him Saint Earl. He's involved with so many good things, and what's taking him away right now is a remarkable project. Sam, how do people call in? What's the process?
Yeah, so Earl left us here, but we are good to go. Give us a call or a text here at 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. And Sandy and I can answer any questions or field any comments.
So, Earl and I talk pretty frequently about the baby boomers, and my assertion is that we baby boomers have left the world worse than we found it in so many ways. And Earl is a baby boomer, but he's definitely not one of those people who is going to leave the world worse than he found it. He's involved in some remarkable initiatives. And the one that takes him away today is something called Voice of the Elders, which is his notion, his initiative, and he's got it almost up and running. And the notion is that the people who are both boomers and just adults in the community will become mentors for young people at risk in the Milwaukee Public School District, and try to stave off some of the people. When you get to seventh and eighth grade in your life, it's when the forks in the road begin to appear before you, and you get a chance to choose exactly the fork in the road that you're going to go down. And as you reach adolescence and post-adolescence, those choices that you can make at the forks in the road can be very important to you. When your peers are suggesting to you that stealing a car and going for a joyride might be a great thing to do, that's a clear fork in the road that creates a choice that can make a huge difference in a life path. And so these Voice of the Elders, the Voice of the Elders effort will be to get people involved with people in their lives at the time when they've now reached this point in life where they're addressing forks in the road and important choices and helping them make right choices. And I think it can be an extremely important initiative, and my hat's off to Earl. It's one of the other things he does that is so remarkable in terms of giving time. Since I started appearing on this show with Earl, we've gone through a whole bunch of different issues that seem to be in the front of people's minds. When I first started talking, we were just talking about the economy and public policy and the history of Milwaukee and Milwaukee's economic fortunes and misfortunes and the national fortunes and misfortunes and the policies that affect it. And then Donald Trump got elected, and it became Donald Trump 24/7, and we could all focus on that. Donald Trump he's on the periphery, and he's there for us to worry about, talk about, but he's really receded. And then we had COVID, and COVID became something that was on the front of everyone's mind, a scary disease. Was it the plague? We initially, when it came, I think we all worried that there would be gurneys and stretchers and people dying left and right from a terrible disease, maybe almost like Ebola. And while it has been a terrible disease and it's caused terrible things in our economy, it's kind of become yesterday's issue. We've gotten used to it. We're living with it. Omicron and its variant seems to be more mild, something more like the flu. It's kind of receded. Now what do we have? Now we have something that feels an awful lot like the beginning of a world war. And we have a lot of economic fallout as the result of all the extreme economic steps we had to take to deal with Omicron, and now with the war. And so what do we have today to talk about? Well, it seems to me we have the American economy facing inflation, facing shortages, facing problems in the workplace in terms of finding enough workers. We just have an unusual set of economic problems, different than we had when we were experiencing first the initial impact of the Trump presidency with tax cuts and a boom and figuring out whether what was happening was going to be injurious to the future. And then the future came, and the future included the pandemic and a recession caused by the pandemic and a whole lot of government expenditure to try and stave off the recession that would have occurred. And now we have inflation and we have rising employment. Now we have a shortage of labor and quite high inflation in the range of 7%. over a running 12-month period. And we have a war, and we have a war that's going to potentially increase the pressure on inflation and make it harder for us to control our economy. So right now, at least, we have more than enough problems to address. And I guess the first one that always comes to my mind is this war, because it is going to have a significant impact on our economy and on the world for some time to come. And I'm confident that as historians look back at this period of the 2020s, this war in Ukraine will become something that is viewed as a very important element of whatever happens hereafter. And I'd like to talk about that just for a minute, because the war in Ukraine, kind of remarkably, when we get down to it, begins to be all about oil and gas. And who knew? You know, Ukraine doesn't itself produce oil and gas. It's got a pipeline that runs beneath it in which the oil and gas from Russia gets to Europe. But we also have a sanctioning process against Russia that, in substantially, in order to have effect, impacts oil and gas. The major export of Russia is oil and gas. They are essentially, in many respects, like Saudi Arabia, to the extent that a significant portion of the GDP of Russia is dependent on oil and gas. And what happened yesterday? We signed an agreement with Europe to try and get them to basically shut down the oil and gas they purchased from Russia, or shut it way down, and to purchase more from the United States. What is Putin telling the Russians? Putin is telling the Russians that this war has basically been fomented by the Americans using their NATO allies to try and squash Russia, and in particular to squeeze off the purchase of oil and gas. So who's telling the truth? What is the truth? How do we pick where we get active in our foreign affairs? How do we decide where we're going to assert American power? And was it smart for Americans to foster a movement by NATO to move NATO into the old USSR republics, one of them being Ukraine? And what was the expected outcome of that in dealing with Russia? And did we misjudge Russia? Was Russia, in fact, a second-rate nation, like Reagan began to call it, and George Bush and Mitt Romney and others who asserted that after the fall of the USSR, Russia was just a second-rate country that we could ignore? And if that's in fact the policy we pursued, have we gotten ourselves to this point today because that's what we did? We wrongfully made assumptions about Russia in terms of its aspirations and the importance that it could play in the world economy, and its willfulness and willingness to assert itself in order to be sure that it could. And I just think that whether or not Ukraine can be directly laid at the feet of prior policies of the United States, foreign policy of the United States, that so many of the steps that the United States has taken with its foreign policies in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Vietnam, in all over its police actions, so-called police actions around the world, as was broadcast at the time, to protect democracy, have turned out so very badly, have left the places that they were so supposedly protecting in terrible shape. Iraq, almost a lawless, anarchic place. Afghanistan, similarly. We left it worse than we found it. And, we go to these places and they're maybe not what we would want them to be, but we leave them in very, very troubled states. And why did we go there in the first place? Vietnam has actually thrived after the war. This communist nation that we were so worried about has maintained its communism, but has built a capitalistic economy that is thriving, one of the fastest growing economies in the world. So I guess where I'm going with this is that I think we all as a people need to start carefully getting ourselves involved in the policy debate about what it is that the United States is establishing as its priorities and pursuing as important in its international affairs. Because whereas domestic affairs are all things we can feel and realize are in our direct interest, whether we have health care, whether we have child daycare, the international affairs have ended up being the process in which we have built a defense budget that sucks a great deal of our national treasure away from solving our domestic problems. We have an international affairs that have put the United States into very troublesome places, spending $1 trillion in the wars in the Mideast since 2000, or more than $1 trillion. And where did we get ourselves, and where did we get the world, and how much did we help those places where we were supposedly reaching out to save democracy for them? And we ought to look at that and stretch our heads and say, how in the world have we used a judgment? What judgmental process has been exercised to get us to this place? And should we not, as an American people, have been asserting ourselves? And wouldn't it have been more democratic, more patriotic, for all of us to assert ourselves, to ask questions about what our foreign policies were, instead of always waving an American flag and claiming to be a patriot, and cheering for every instance in which military has been brought to bear to solve a problem in the world. So, I guess if there's anyone listening, Dave, if you're listening out there calling, because I would like to talk to you again about some of these issues associated with Russia. We'll be back after a break, and we can talk then a little bit maybe more about this, and then some things about the economic issues facing the country.